Back, Jim, back. If you don't buy things, toilet paper, new cars, computerized blenders, electrically operated sexual devices, stereo systems with brain-implanted headphones, screwdrivers, miniature built-in radar devices, voice-activated computers.
Take it easy, Jeffrey. Be calm.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to Take Me to Your Reader, discussing adapted science fiction at its best and worst. I'm Seth.
I'm James Cole.
And I'm Colin.
Yeah. And this time we are going to be talking about 12 Monkeys, which is a Terry Gilliam movie from 1995, which is adapted from a short film.
Inspired by.
That's a kind of an adaptation.
True.
I didn't say based on, I said adapted from a short French film called La Jetée. Or something like that.
Thank you, Emmanuel.
Yes, thank you, Emmanuel. that's as close as I could get. Here we go. From the man himself. I've got it on my phone.
La Jetée.
There we go. Perfect. That movie.
Yes.
And so this is different for us, because normally we go from written to film. And this time it's from experimental film to film, feature film.
Right? Yeah, 1962.
The movie is... It stretches the boundaries of what you think of as a movie, right? Which is why it's experimental.
Right. Yeah. I think I've mentioned this a few times. I backed a Kickstarter 12 years ago that is never fulfilled. And it was for an adaptation of Neil Gaiman's short story, The Price. And the guy wanted to make an animatic. And an animatic is exactly what we saw. It is, you know, moving, you know, it's a static picture that moves, expands, zooms, pans to something.
The camera moves over the picture.
Right. Yeah. With a backing track or a voiceover.
Yeah.
And they call that an animatic. And that's the perfect description of La Jetée.
Yeah. And when you look at it in the credits, it says un film roman, which means film novel. Which there must be some connection between there. And Emmanuel said, I had a text going with Emmanuel saying that there are like television novels as well, telenovels. And I was like, oh, like telenovela. Right?
Yeah.
In Mexico. I mean, it's all
they
in
call
the
those soap operas.
Yeah, it's in the romance languages, right? So there's some connection in the words at least.
Okay.
But yeah. Yeah, like you were saying, the pictures. Well, did you finish your story?
Well, no, just this, it's this idea that it's not animated, but there's motion.
Right.
And there's usually a voice over because there's no motion, you don't know what's going on in all cases.
Mm-hmm.
So well, there's no one on camera to talk, right? There's no actors. Well, no talking actors, put it that way.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. Right, yeah. I mean, you can go on YouTube and find lots of motion comics as well, where it basically, the film kind of pages over the comic and does some narration as well.
Okay.
I don't remember if it does all the dialogue or just parts of it or like sound effects, but it's kind of a similar thing to what we have here. I wonder, so this is your first time seeing it?
Yeah, I've never seen this before.
And this is your first time seeing it? Okay.
Yeah.
And the 12 Monkeys we had all seen before?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And the reason we're doing this one is because it was at OMSI, the Oregon Museum of Science and Industry, in their film festival.
Yes.
Had any of us ever seen it in the theater?
95.
I don't think so.
Yeah. I think that was a rental.
Yeah, same.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that I really love about the film festival is getting to see stuff in the theater that I never got to see or, you know, haven't seen in 40 years.
Right.
So this time I really tried to watch the film closely. And, you know, we're going to spoil everything. So if you want to watch it, there's a version that's pretty high definition on YouTube, but it has French subtitles. But if you tell Google or if you tell YouTube to do auto translation, it does a pretty good job of re-subtitling it for you.
Okay, now really, let me ask you, how would you know?
because I watched the other version.
Okay, so you can compare the two.
I can compare the two.
All right.
Yeah. I mean, there may be things here or there. I watched like the first 5 minutes of it with the auto subtitle, and I was like, this is what the other one said. So I had them side by side.
Okay. Okay.
So, and it's possible that somebody has fed that into the captions.
So you watched this more than once?
I watched parts of it. Well, this is my second time watching it. I watched it years ago.
Oh, you did? Oh, okay.
Yeah, but so I tried to watch it more closely this time, and I noticed that there is a scene with movement in it.
There are two of them.
There was,
two
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I noticed that too.
There's some where, like, I thought there was movement, but it's just sort of film grain making it look like there was movement.
Mm-hmm.
So what was the first one?
It's just something I remember from the Wikipedia article saying there were actually two scenes with motion.
Okay.
I remember spotting one because I noticed the motion blur.
Yeah, there's one where it's focusing on the love interest, I think it was the lady.
The lady.
Yeah. In her bed, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it shows her eyes blink.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Her eyes open.
Yeah.
And I thought that was interesting. It's part of it was, I think, I was reading in Wikipedia. Sorry, Dr. Sue.
You can read Wikipedia.
I know. You can use it to find sources, but it's not a primary source, right?
Right.
Dr. Sue is a academic librarian. Is that what the title is?
From Johns Hopkins.
Yes.
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 She's also a saxophonist.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Cool.
Yeah. There was different equipment that was used at different times, and I think he didn't have enough time with any motion camera to do everything that he wanted to, and so there's only a few seconds of motion.
I found it. It's the same scene. There's 4 seconds of the woman, her mouth opening, mm-hmm. and 20 seconds later, there's 6 seconds of her eyes opening and looking around.
Okay.
So that's virtually the one I remember, is the eyes opening and looking around. Right?
Yeah. So the interesting thing, though, about the movie is when I first saw it, I wondered, is this archival footage of something? And then somebody has put a new story on it. But no, it's not that. A lot of the production that goes into a movie was done here just without any motion capture of it. And of course, movies are also still images that are put together. It's just, instead of there being one every 4 seconds, there's 24 per second.
That's a pretty big difference.
It is a pretty big difference, but it's not true motion, right? Your brain makes it look like true motion. And of course, today with digital stuff, it's probably different.
Yeah. It reminds me of that experiment where you hold something over the slit and then you like go like that and you see the whole picture.
Yeah. So you have to hire actors, to act out the scenes that you're then taking the still images of. And so I'm curious how long something like this actually takes and, how you go about it. Cause you're just chasing them around with a Pentax.
That's what they did.
Yeah.
That'd be funny.
The thing is though, it's, I guess you could spend more time trying to compose each scene one at a time.
Yeah.
Or, the exact opposite of this are the extremely long one shots that you've seen in John Wick,
sure,
or Resurrection, or any of a number of other places, where the camera is happening, the camera is there with no cuts or changes for an extreme period of time.
Right.
And in this, they're trying to take a snapshot. Mm-hmm. But I guess if you wanted, you could say, oh, no, look more sad. No, and I'm lift up your arm slightly.
Yeah, and the editing process would be interesting too, because I'm sure you're taking thousands of pictures and then just pulling out, the few hundred that you need to actually make the movie.
Yeah, well, which is also what happens in editing, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. any good photographer, you only get like a percent.
Yeah,
of the shots you take actually given to the receipt, the mm-hmm. customer, I suppose.
Yeah. So it's an interesting experiment. I would love to hear Phil's take on a film like this. Just because he taught film for years.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'm hoping he watches Resurrection for that very reason.
Okay, because of all the different techniques in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
In fact, we're recording this coming up Friday, and I'm hoping to continue that topic, to see if he's seen it or not.
Then we have an AR for you.
Yeah.
You should bring up Legite and see if he's either watched it before or we'll watch it and then get back to us.
Okay.
Yeah.
We've been talking about
bring this to his attention.
A grab bag episode where we have a whole bunch of little things we want to talk about. Mm-hmm. None of them is interesting enough or long enough to be an episode by itself, but a good number of them very disconnected.
It's the potpourri category.
Italian episode. Boom, done.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about what the movie is actually about, because it sort of purports to be historical documents a la Galaxy Quest.
Right.
that starts with somebody who has survived a nuclear war, has a very vivid memory of being at Orly, which I think is an airport. Right.
Right.
Yes.
There to, watch the planes take off and land. Right. That was the
Sunday afternoon thing to do.
It's before the internet.
Oh, no. We used to do that with Peter.
This is what it reminded me of, Peter and Tim and you guys.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Back when you could go to the airport and actually get through.
Funny story. You can still go to the airport and do that. And if you go to the top of the parking structure right across the mm-hmm. way from the airport, you have great views. But if you stand up there long enough with a camera taking pictures of airplanes, people will come by and ask you what you're doing.
They're going to think it's fishy.
Yep.
I could see that.
Yeah. So anyhow, that's what they're doing. The kid is there, and he sees a woman, and he sees a man running toward her, and apparently get shot. And he kind of remembers this as the first time he'd seen a dead person, someone killed.
Right. But he really remembers the woman. That's the scene that's fixed in his head.
That's the indelible thing, right? And so then after this war, after Paris is destroyed, everyone is living underground in the, I don't know exactly where it is. I'm sure people who know France would know. He calls it the galleries. So it's probably under some other structure, right? But
probably under there's a crap ton of museums there in Paris. And there's a lot of the structures also go underground. There's a lot of underground galleries and a lot of the palaces and the old palaces, stuff like that. That's what it seemed like where they were to me.
Okay.
Because they did pan over, well, not pan, but in the background of some of the shots were the galleries.
Sure.
I recognize some of them.
The main character is, I guess, captured, you know, because there's a war, right?
Right. And they're surviving underground.
Yeah. And so he is eventually experimented on. Lots of prisoners are experimented on, and most of them die or go crazy from getting a brassiere put over their head. that's what it looked like to me.
Well, in this case, they're monitoring everybody, right? That's what it was. They're monitoring everybody, even their dreams. They're monitoring their dreams.
Ah.
And they caught him having this super vivid dream.
Right.
And that's why they chose him to experiment on for this time travel deal, because they would go back to... The dream was vivid enough in his head where it anchored him in the past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so, like we mentioned, it's mostly still images with voiceover. But there is not no dialogue. There is dialogue. There's this mumbled German from evidently the Dr. Mengele's in the camp.
Yes,
right. Experimenting on people and telling them to count backwards from 20 or saying, there was one time where I thought it was kind of a chilling thing. I was like, did I catch that right? And I kind of backed it up and listened to it and typed it into Google Translate, and it said something about... half of him is here and half of him is somewhere else.
Wow.
And that was, I don't think it was literal. I think it was talking about his mind.
Right.
But yes, he is essentially chosen to travel in time and try to avert or improve their situation.
Right. Because the human race is failing.
Mm-hmm.
And so they need some help from the past or the future, or otherwise the human race is going to go away.
Yeah.
Right.
And... so then when he travels, you know, he, because he's so focused on this woman, he always materializes near her. And she eventually comes to call him her ghost, right? Where they kind of establish a relationship. And so there's lots of photos of them like going in a natural history museum.
Yep.
Just walking around together and enjoying each other's company. But this is, of course, not what he's actually there for. I don't remember, does it say exactly what he's supposed to be looking for?
He's supposed to be trying to... gather resources to bring back to their time, which seemed odd to me because I'm like, how the heck do you do that?
I remember now. they're piloting this, sending him into the past to learn enough about the process to be able to then send him into the future and get help from the future if humanity recovers.
Right.
So they're kind of beta testing
the process. But if humanity doesn't recover, how is there a future?
Well, that would be, you'd want to find that out, right? It was like in the flash forward TV show where there are people who got a flash forward to 6 months ahead, but some people didn't get one.
Yeah. What did you see? Black.
Yeah.
Oof.
So they realize, I probably die between now and then.
Yep.
That's cheery.
Or I'm in a room with no light.
Yeah. And so
I thought I had written there somewhere he was supposed to bring something back other than knowledge.
Right.
In which case I'm like, how do they do that?
Well, he brings back he eventually goes to the future and he brings back a power source.
Well, yeah. That's the future. Right. I was thinking more along the past part, where is he going to bring back, I think, establish some sort of like transport system where they can go in the past, bring food back to the present or something. I don't know. Mm. That's kind of what went through my mind. It was like creating something like that from the past where there's, you know, abundance in the past, right?
Mm-hmm. It would be like in 11/22/63, where the guy's been serving the same beef to his customers for years.
but driving the door warden insane by doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So yeah, eventually he kind of gets in contact with people from the future. Who I guess in the future it's very popular to have like wax thingies on the bridge of your nose or
little,
on your
right here.
Yeah,
third eye or something.
It's other mother.
So then he brings back the power source.
Right.
And realizes, okay, they're not going to have any use for me anymore, and they're going to get rid of me. And the people from the future reach out and say, hey, we can bring you into our time. And he's like, no, I'd rather be with my lady.
Right.
Even though it's only a few years before the apocalypse. So it's kind of romantic.
True. Yeah.
But of course, you know, he does show up there on the jetty. And as he's running towards her, he sees somebody from his time and gets shot dead.
Yep.
And he realizes, oh, I'm probably here somewhere. I'm a kid here somewhere observing all this.
Yeah, and it closes the loop.
And closes the loop, yeah. And he realizes as he's dying that as a child he saw himself die.
Yeah.
Which is wild. I love the closed loop in time travel because it's the most consistent, right?
Sure. Yeah. You know, almost like the power source, because like we were talking about, we don't know if humans survived or not, but if they did, it is very likely that their action helped people survive in the past so that they're there in the first place.
Mm-hmm. That reminds me of when I worked at Long's Drugs, which Emily also did, not at my store. There was a gal there who every time she would page somebody because like a kid got lost or something, she would say, you know, Joey Bag of Donuts, if you are in the store, please come to customer service. I'm like, just Joey Bag of Donuts, come to the customer service was all you needed to say because he was not in the store. He doesn't hear it. So
right.
I was like, that's unnecessary information. But
so what was the Bag of Donuts?
That's a fun last name. Bag of Donuts.
Oh, sorry. That's the last name.
Oh.
Bring a Bag of Donuts. That's customer service.
Credit Keith Law with that one. That's his name for a hypothetical baseball player. Bag of Donuts.
Okay. I thought maybe it was a safe word that the mom would use for an emergency so that the kid couldn't be lured off someplace else.
Sure. I should have said Joe Blow or Jane Doe, you know, somebody. Joey Bag of Donuts is better.
Joey Bag of Donuts, definitely better.
Yeah. Yeah, so... Like I said, I really enjoy a good, consistent, closed loop kind of thing.
Yeah, I like it when all the knots are tied off. Mm-hmm. Yeah, nothing's left dangling.
And there's a lot of movies that brush close to the true closed loop, like Deja Vu with Denzel Washington kind of does. Mm-hmm. It has a similar sort of thing in it. But then there's a lot of other ones like, you know, The Terminator sort of does. The first Terminator movie kind of works, right?
I mean,
was there ever an original timeline
right. Where
Terminator didn't come back?
Okay, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
It gets there. Yeah. I was going to say, on the flip side of that, they kind of purposely don't close the loop, though, because they leave
the
universe open for this to happen time and time again.
Do you want a Terminator Genesis? Because that's how you get a Terminator Genesis.
Exactly.
Yeah. But the first movie, because I've thought about this sometimes, I'm like, wait, when Kyle Reese is talking about I served from 21 to 27 and the day of the apocalypse is August 8th, 1997, was that the right date? Or was that the date before the first Terminator went back? Because if so, that might change things.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah. But I don't think there is an original timeline if you want to keep it as a closed loop. But the rest of the series does not keep it as a closed loop.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. But, and the Sarah Connor Chronicles does fun stuff with that, where there's a discussion of what was Judgment Day for you? You know, if it's a different date, then we're from different timelines.
Well, and yeah, it's an interesting thought experiment, because if there are multiply existing timelines,
you're never fixing anything.
You're never fixing anything, right? You can't guarantee that even if you change something else in this timeline, that what you go forward to is completely unknown.
Right.
To me, it makes more sense to have more like the Back to the Future style, where if you make a change, it tries to erase itself in the future, and then...
Or Looper has the instantaneous effect, right?
When he's riding to himself on his arm, that was brilliant.
Yeah, yeah. The other one I was thinking about was...
point you just made is actually kind of what I liked about the 12 Monkeys movie.
We'll get there.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to mention that before I forget.
Okay, all right.
I'll remind you.
Because the scientists talk about that, where they're not traveling back in time to try and prevent this from happening. They're traveling back in time to learn more about the virus so that they can produce a vaccine or a cure.
That they can bring to the future.
Yeah. Which completely changes that dynamic and changes the dynamic for James Cole in the first place. And then, changes the perspective of time travel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's an interesting movie. I haven't seen a lot of things like it, and so yeah, and I I don't know why the choice to have the little brief motion thing. Is it talking about, you know, love is the only thing that transcends time and space?
Oh, I have no idea. You know, this is, it's a really well-regarded piece of art. Mm-hmm. In 2012, the British Film Institute did their 100 best films of all time. Mm-hmm. This was number 50.
Wow. Oh, it's definitely profoundly anti-war, right? Because in the movie, it says some people declare themselves the victors.
Yeah.
Right.
And like, but were you really?
Right.
I mean, it reminded me of Alas Babylon, right? At the end where somebody flies in and contacts the people in the town and they're like, hey, who won the war? And he's like, oh, we won the war. Not that it matters. You know, everything's right. Crap now.
But we won, damn it.
Yeah. Did you like it, Colin?
Oh, I hated it.
Really?
Yeah. I thought it was boring as snot. Oh. I felt like it should have been like a three-paragraph short story. I could have read it much and enjoyed it, but just reading it myself instead of being shown with all these slow interstitial gaps of moving black and white pictures of various interpretations. And
It does seem like it could have been something written like 8 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, yeah. A couple pages.
Yep. That would have been perfect.
Yeah. I mean, I really enjoy it. But you know, I like kind of just looking at the pictures and maybe the watching things like Solaris is getting me to like try and look into the interstices of everything. Because you have to
sometimes. Yeah. I think for me that at a different time, I might have had a better chance of liking this because I have watched too many things like it. And everything like that. I've been thinking about this a lot. Because, you know, I talk about how these things affect my mood and how I inject myself in there. And so the story of what happens to the guy is just absolutely horrible.
Yes.
Right? He watches his own death as a child and then goes and falls in love and then saves the world, right, in theory, and then dies. I mean, that's not a really great story.
Right.
But I've seen Solaris and 2001 and Paprika, and I also watched The Man Who Fell to Earth. So I've seen, in addition to a lot of artistic films, a ton of pornography. And
I don't think it's technically termed pornography, but...
Well, I think after the fifth or sixth sex scene, you kind of have to wonder
about... Might as well be at this point.
Sure. Colin knows it when he sees it, so...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if I'd watched it another time, I might have had a better chance.
Well, and I
okay, so which one was worse, Solaris or Je La Jete? I guess this one was shorter.
Yeah. I mean, Solaris's main selling point was that we had Nisu in the background. give me some comedy support going like, man, I wish I was brave enough to say the things you're saying right now.
I cut that out of the previous podcast. So. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think, James?
It was interesting. I'll give you that. Yeah. I didn't find it. I don't think I found it as boring as Colin. But
it's not, definitely not.
Not as enjoyable as you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I wouldn't say that it's something that you necessarily watch for pleasure, right? It's not an enjoyable movie in that way. But like seen as a piece of art, I admire it.
I appreciate the novelty of it because I've never seen anything like it before.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed the story behind it, but then when they started getting to the long gaps of just photo, okay, I get the idea. Move along now.
Yeah. So having seen an artistic style film, Resurrection, that I really enjoyed, I actually think I like these other things quite a bit less because I know there's the potential to make things that are thoughtful and, you know, thought-provoking and less distinct.
What? We found art house that Colin likes?
Without being boring.
Without being boring.
Okay.
Sweet. That's good to know.
Yeah. So yeah, we should watch Resurrection sometime.
All right.
It's not adapted, but it's incredible.
All right. Well, maybe we could move on to a different kind of sort of arty film.
Yes.
By Terry Gilliam, directed by Terry Gilliam, starring Bruce Willis and Madeline Stowe, Christopher Plummer.
And Brad Pitt.
And Brad Pitt.
Who's just there
early Brad
eating
Pitt.
Up the entire movie.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, Brad Pitt and his eye prostheses, whatever it was. Something like glued onto his eyeball.
Oh, yeah.
To make his one eye look lazy.
Some sort of crazy contact.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
He actually spent time at a mental institution to study people that were severely disturbed to be in that role.
Interesting. like Simple Jack.
Right.
Sorry. It's a Tropic Thunder reference. People will get it. Yeah. This is a rewatch for me, but first time in the theater. Same for you and James?
First time in
the
theater. Yeah.
First time in
theater. Definitely a rewatch.
Yeah, the highlight of the movie is Brad Pitt's performance, right? I think, did he win a Golden Globe for it? I think he did.
He did, and he also got an Oscar nomination for it.
Yeah, and it's super loopy and showy, you know, it's like, mm-hmm. you can be like, yes, that is what the Academy at that time was nominating. There are lots of Rain Man and Shine and, you know, other things where there was, I don't know, I'm not sure how well it's aged, but it is a really good performance, right? Because he's not just one note either, because he gets right. super loud sometimes, right. Moons people at sometimes. there is a substantial number of butt cheeks in this movie, mostly Bruce Willis's, but also Brad Pitt's. But yeah, the credits say inspired by La Jetée, right? Mm-hmm. Because really, what it takes is, ooh, I like that idea of that closed loop. And the person seeing himself die at the airport.
And falling in love with the woman.
Right. And falling in love with the woman in the past. Yes. Yeah.
A lot of the bones of the story are there.
Yeah.
You know, some sort of catastrophic event in the past mm-hmm. drove humans down underground. And they're trying to figure out how to fix their present from the past.
It's not a war.
They do omit the future. There's no future in 21 Keys.
Right. Yeah.
Which is fine.
Well, and they switch from a radioactive war to a virus.
Yeah, virus, right.
Yes. Yeah.
More relatable, I guess now. Post Cold War.
mm-hmm. I like the line from Kung Fu Panda. One often meets one's destiny on the road he takes to avoid it. And that's what the movie is, right? Where it's like we don't want this terrible thing to happen. We'll send this guy to the past, and he ends up precipitating all of the events, inspiring the creation of the army of the 12 monkeys.
Yeah.
Because when he's
although it wasn't even the 12 monkeys the whole time.
It was a red herring. So I guess
this is like part one of the best many things I like about this movie. I like the movie. So anyway.
To
answer your eventual question.
Yeah, they are kind of chasing this thing. They're pulling on a thread and like this is going to be it. This is the important thing, and then they find out no, it wasn't.
Yep.
But they do inspire the creation of the Army of the 12 Monkeys. Mm-hmm. But one of the fun things about this is, you know, the original film doesn't, of course, go into any of the, so you're going to tell somebody that you're from the future, that you're a time traveler. How do you do that without getting put in a funny form?
Yep.
And this movie, of course, you know, he is. And it's a very, I haven't seen many Terry Gilliam movies. I think this is maybe the only one I've seen.
Did you watch Brazil last year at OMSI?
No, and I've not seen Time Bandits either. I've seen parts of it.
Wow.
But
what about the infamous Baron von Munchausen?
I did watch that in German class in high school. Okay. the art design in the movie reminds me a little bit of Dark City, a little bit of Mickey 17. Actually, I think Mickey 17 owes a lot of the art style of that.
True.
To 12 Monkeys.
Yeah, that Terry Gilliam style.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The big high chair, you know, where he's being interrogated.
Yeah.
How do you convince this beautiful lady that you're not a complete nutter, right? It's not enough to just like the music of the era. That's not going to win her over. Mm-hmm. In the car, he's always like, oh, I love the music, you know. Disappearing in front of her, pulling the disappearing act is a good trick.
It does, But all the little nods back and forth, because you're right, you know, he goes back in time and he gives the idea of the Army of the 12 Monkeys mm-hmm. to the guy that creates the army because it doesn't exist back then.
Right.
Mm-hmm. The two telephone messages that were recorded and left. Oh,
yeah.
Of course, I can't call this number because the number doesn't exist.
Doesn't exist yet.
And yeah, it's just some lady's house, right? And then later on it goes to the right place, but Madeline Stowe's character thinks that she's making a prank call. Essentially, and leaves this rambling message that leads to them sending him back.
Yes.
And that's insane. When she starts quoting it, and he's quoting it right along with her, what she said on the message.
Yeah.
I'm sitting there in the movie going, oh, I love this stuff.
Yeah. That was really cool.
That's what clicks for you.
Okay. Yeah. But the little breadcrumbs that she picks up on, right, where he says something about the kid supposedly lost down the...
The well,
right? Which it is a thing that happened.
Yeah.
And it was like all over the news. And there have been several things where there's a big hoax about somebody like
right.
accidentally going up in a balloon pulled by a lawn chair. And then turns out they were never, no, there was nobody on the lawn chair.
Yeah.
You know, people just pulling pranks or crop circles, all kinds of things like that.
Oh, those are real. Shyamalan sure. says so.
Right, right. Right. Yes. And yeah, so like when they discover that the kid was just hiding, right, she's like, oh, maybe he was telling the truth. Mm-hmm. And then she finds the picture of him from like World War One.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
He just briefly popped in there because the time travel is not an exact science. Right. And so they send him back to places and then he'll slip back out.
Yep. Well, and he still had the shell in his leg too, that they extracted.
Right. 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 That's right. They find the bullet. Yeah. And they're like, that mm-hmm. bullet is really old.
How do you have a really old piece of metal sitting in your leg?
Now, like radiocarbon dating or whatever it is, wouldn't work, but you know,
too close
manufacturing.
Yeah.
And content.
Yeah.
And
yeah. Other, yeah. You just look it up on the internet and,
when he's in the high chair, he's interrogated by this floating white ball with all the television screens on
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Somebody sued the movie because they say they stole his invention, and he won his suit in court and got a monetary payout because of it.
What was the invention?
This ball with multiple televisions on it, which was kind of like a, you know, like a teleconferencing thing. Or...
Oh.
Really?
Yeah.
It just strikes me as like a like MTV ad sort of thing.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So with Terry Gilliam, right, and I don't know from his other films, is there a lot of that sort of fisheye look to it and lots of real close-ups and quick, kind of quick cuts and everything looks grungy and dirty?
Yeah. There's a lot of that, you know, like kind of wrapped in plastic, literally yeah, wrapped in
very
like
literally
vinyl yeah. plastic.
This way, yeah.
Kind of mm-hmm. that has that look to it.
Now, am I correct in thinking that there are, it keeps flashing back to Bruce Willis as a kid doing his best slack-jawed look. And the kid that they got right. for that, it is an absolutely great, like this kid got straight Fs in first grade.
I don't think so.
So he's looking at what's happening. And there's a couple times where like his brain is trying to reconstruct that memory throughout the movie. And in one of the flashes, the person he sees running past him that ends up getting shot is Brad Pitt. Did you guys catch that?
No.
Or am I totally off? I was pretty sure that's what it was. Because I couldn't remember the movie well enough to remember who it was who got shot at that point. I mean, I knew that Bruce Willis died. Sorry, spoilers. James Cole. But I'm pretty sure there's a shot in there where he's remembering it as if it's Brad Pitt who's the one who's running through the airport.
Well, I think it was a guy with long hair. And Pitt had long hair, so maybe in his memory, he reconstructed that. Right. But I don't think it was ever
in the movie.
In the movie, I don't think it was ever Brad Pitt.
Okay, I will look it up. I'll try and find the movie on streaming someplace and try and find that scene.
Yeah.
Going to be hard to find because it does it over and over.
Where you the reconstruction part tracks because it kind of did work that way.
Yeah,
where he remembered very over time he seemed to remember more throughout the movie to get to the complete memory. And then we end up seeing the complete memory, and that's the movie.
Right, right, right. All I was saying, Seth, was I don't think it was ever actually Brad Pitt. It was always him dying. Not like time was fluctuating in front of him or other kinds of things, which could happen in a time movie, right?
Sure.
Yeah. Right. The question is if in the movie Brad Pitt was ever filmed a version of that they showed.
They could have been. It also could have been what's the guy's name?
Bruce Willis, Brad Pitt.
No, the other actor we haven't mentioned yet, David Morse.
Yes.
Could have been David Morse.
Yeah, I don't think it was David Morse. Actually, well, if Google's AI summary can be trusted, it does say, it does show Brad Pitt's character, Jeffrey Goines, running through the frantically at the airport. However, it's revealed to be a false memory.
Okay.
So yeah, which I think it was clever because it kind of kept me guessing even though I'd seen the movie before.
Right.
And I did not remember the David Morse thing, except for like the first time you see him, he's like the creepiest dude in a book signing line.
He is still the creepiest dude the whole time. It's like, would you like me to open this for you?
He does a really good job of being freaking creepy.
Well, he's an actor I really love, but you know, like I don't know. He was never, well, I won't say he's never huge because he's tall. He's a big dude. That's why he was the brutal in Green Mile.
Right.
I do like him as an actor, and I'd never seen him do anything like this. He also is caked up in makeup in John Adams as George Washington. Like, we did not need that makeup.
Yeah.
When you watch it in high definition, you're like, oof, that's not good.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's there's good twists in it where you're like, oh, you've been chasing the wrong thing the whole time. Mm-hmm. So it adds an additional twist.
I like that.
to the movie, or to the original movie, right?
Well, and then in addition, in the original story, there's never any doubt about what's going on. But the Bruce Willis character, James Cole, goes through some doubts as to, is he sane? Is he really back with the woman he loves, Dr. Rayleigh? Or is he really sent back in time to try and stop these things or learn about these things as they're happening? Yeah. Or what's going on? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they've got him convinced that he's a NASA. Yeah,
I wrote down one of the quotes from that movie for that reason, because where he says, oh, wouldn't it be great if I was crazy? Then the world would be okay.
Yeah.
And I thought that was fantastic.
I'm taking crazy pills. Yeah, there's times in the United States.
Did you guys notice the same kind of like aesthetic with all the scientists and the future and stuff like that between the French movie and this one?
Yeah, there's definitely some common DNA there. I thought
that
was cool,
too. Nods back to it. They had those like
the weird glasses.
Weirdo glasses and things like that. I was like, oh, these scientists are freaking weird.
Yeah.
There's also, and I haven't read a lot about this, and I probably don't have all the right details, is both the original film and the 1995 film have a bunch of nods back to Hitchcock movies.
Oh, really?
Particularly Vertigo and other things. If you were a film fan, you would recognize certain scenes standing out because they happen certain ways. And at one point, the Madeleine Stowe character wears the same coat that came from one of the Alfred Hitchcock movies. Mm. And
I need to do a marathon of Hitchcock movies sometime because I've enjoyed every one that I've seen. But I haven't seen a lot of them. So.
Yeah. Mary Robinette Kowal, one of my favorite authors nowadays, actually wrote a short story, which is a science fiction version of The Man Who Knew Too Much. I think I've got that right. Nice. But yeah, it's really interesting.
Nice.
I liked it.
Yeah. I really enjoyed the 12 Monkeys movie. I mean, and it is like it's gross. The art design and stuff. I need a shower now. Yeah.
Very grungy.
Yeah. But I'm just a big sucker for the, there was never any chance of you changing anything. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a downer ending. Right?
It is.
It's definitely a downer ending.
You know, one thing that they could have done to make it a non-downer ending is when he dies is having him go to the future, return to the future, because he would have a sample of the virus in his blood because he was exposed to it.
Did it get deployed in the airport?
Yeah.
Yeah, because he opened the canister. That was the whole point.
Okay.
Were samples.
Okay. I couldn't remember if he actually opened it.
Yeah. Yeah, there was an aerosol one, so he opened it and he exposed it all and he smiled the whole time.
Okay.
Yeah. It was super creepy and you're like, it's over. That's it. Yep. Right? They're you're doing this at an airport.
It's a perfect place to do it.
Classic worst case for virus dispersion. The other place is any place like London, Paris, New York, Tokyo with a subway system.
Yeah. Any place a lot of people travel to, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would have been a way to put a bow on it, right? Where he finds himself back in the future. Maybe he's still dying, but he's, you know.
I mean, your happy ending couldn't be the scientist that actually found the dude on the airplane and they were going to fix the world.
Oddly enough, isn't the lady sitting next to him at the airport? Yeah.
Yeah, she was one of the scientists.
Yeah. Now, the question is, I don't think she was a time-traveling scientist. I think that's her past self.
Yes.
Hmm. And
she's one of the immune.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it seemed like, they were informed and he was going to, kill him or something. Take care of him somehow or somehow translate knowledge to the future. It seemed like he had done his job even though he had died. So it's sacrificed, the ultimate sacrifice, I suppose. Mm-hmm. So for me, it wasn't such a downer ending in that regard. He did what he was meant to do. He fulfilled his purpose.
Hmm. Yeah. And to me, again, we're talking art film. It's, he failed and then it was such a failure that one of the scientists sat next to the guy that was going to spread it all over the place and they had no idea, right? Because that man's identity at the time was safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he James Cole was not able to communicate back to the future that this is all a red herring.
Yeah.
Which would have been good to be able to do, but I still really like it. Do you like the movie?
No.
Okay. And peeled another layer off the Colin Onion. It's not a surprising one.
Nope.
So there is a television show. Did it really come out on MTV? I saw someplace that said it premiered on MTV. But
I only watched the first episode, and I was like, it didn't really hook me.
I watched the first episode today while my test was running. I'm not slacking off. My code's compiling.
Pretty much.
And it has Aaron Sanford. Is that what his name is? The guy who played Pyro in the X-Men movies?
Yeah.
And right at the end, it introduces Emily, I now can't remember, Emily Hampshire or something like that from Schitt's Creek.
Stevie. Okay.
And then it has one of the gals from Suits as well, and it's as Dr. Rayleigh. But it definitely takes a different non-closed loop time travel.
Really?
In the series. In the first episode, you find out when she really, really quickly realizes, oh, he's telling the truth, because he has her watch that he's found at some point in the future off of her corpse.
Oh,
off the bony wrist, you know, and he shows it to her and he says, keep an eye on your watch, and he scratches it, and then everything kind of shakes and a scratch shows up, frequency style or looper style.
Oh, yeah.
And
cool.
And so to my mind, it should have been the watch already had a scratch on it.
Right.
And this one didn't. And that's what created it. That's the closed loop version of it. But
yeah,
this one, it's I think somebody, I looked it up on Reddit, and they're like, no, it's more like spirals than a closed loop. So you kind of you turn the closed loop.
It could be a closed loop.
It looks like a closed loop from the top down,
right?
But
you
turn it on its side in three dimensions. It's different.
Yeah.
I'm not super hyped to watch the show. Joe Herbers on the Facebook page said that that he watched it and enjoyed it.
Hmm. You know, it could be an enjoyable thing if you think about it. It's a classic, you know, murder mystery whodunit kind of a thing,
mm-hmm.
right? And you could see where you could have lots of like failures and successes. It's like, oh, did we get it? And you go back to the future and everything's all screwed up. No. Or, oh, yes, we found something. And so now only half the people died instead of 95% of them.
Right.
Or
yeah. Yeah.
And is that good enough?
Like,
and
if we change like something quantum else? Leap. That's what it could be like.
Yeah.
Where every episode they go somewhere else to figure out what's going on. And then over the season, you have some, you know, season story arc. Mm.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Let's talk about other science fiction or other time travel things. Journeyman. Did you ever watch Journeyman? Short-lived show with the dude from Rome. Can't remember his name. Kevin McKidd, I think. Scottish guy. Where he just randomly travels. Like he can't control it. Sort of quantum leap style. And he goes into the past. And there's somebody that he's always meeting up with, played by Moon Bloodgood.
By who?
Moon Bloodgood from Terminator Salvation.
Right.
You find out later that she is a traveler like him, but she travels into the future to meet up with him. And she can't control it. But so she's like from the 40s, and here she's in the 2000s. Cool. But it's not a closed loop thing. So he tries to figure out, what am I supposed to figure out here? And on one occasion, he leaves like his digital camera behind in the past. So when he comes back to the future, all the technology is way more advanced.
Wow.
So it's like smart paper and all kind of stuff. He's like, oh crap, what do I do? There's another one where he has either doesn't have a kid or has a kid of a different gender. And so he has to try and figure out how to get him and his wife to hook up at the right time.
What if Ethan was a girl?
Huh. Yeah, yeah.
That's almost like, you know, the like season 3, season 4 bridge in Eureka. Where there's some time travel. Oh, yeah. Eureka's great fun. It's filmed out of Vancouver, but theoretically set in Astoria area.
Okay.
And it is, just watch it. It's fun.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it.
Okay.
It's very episodic. The season-long arc stuff tends to happen in seasons 2, 3, and 4.
Do you remember Voyagers with Phileas Bogg and the kid?
Yeah. I know I saw a few episodes of it, but it would have been early in the 70s.
Yeah.
I haven't seen anything since.
They had like a compass or something that would show them either red or green, depending on if they'd fixed whatever they were supposed to do.
Yeah.
That's a sad story, because the guy who played Phileas Bogg accidentally killed himself with a stunt gun that he just assumed it was harmless.
Right. Oh, he was filming some spy show.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah. And as a joke, put it to his head and pulled the trigger and killed him.
Yeah. It turns out that, you know, a paper wadding shot fast enough will still kill you.
Yeah.
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 Jeez.
Other favorite time travel things? I mean, we all saw Back to the Future this year.
At the
film festival. It'd been a long time since I'd seen that one in theater.
Yeah.
But it was my, 700th time watching the movie.
Yeah. Time Cop.
Time Cop. Time Cop's fantastic.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it is. All right.
It's great fun.
Yes.
I don't know what you don't like about it.
I used to watch that movie on repeat as a kid. That movie was great.
Yeah.
Wow. What other time?
Terminator. I mean,
the Terminator Chronicles. Yep. Yeah.
Even though his thesis on time travel is ridiculous.
I mean, talking about The Closed Loop, one of the movies that I went to see in the theater that I'd never seen in the theater, but we have covered on this podcast, is Predestination.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Talk about loops.
Yeah.
Wow.
Looper.
Yeah.
Looper.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Star Trek. When they lose data in San Francisco.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Yeah. Or the original series where they go back to the, you know, 60s.
Right.
Yeah. That was supposed to be a spinoff.
Yeah.
That never happened. And that's a shame.
Yeah.
Or episode of Star Trek 4, right?
Like Star Trek Voyage 4. Home.
Save the Whales.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah,
I just love watching that one because it's San Francisco. I'm like, I know where this all says. And, you know, they're doing a lot of stuff in the city. And I was like, yeah.
They should have asked you where the nuclear vessels were, right?
Yes. Nuclear vessels. My favorite tidbit about that is the lady who's like, ooh, I'm not sure I know the answer to that. I think it's across the bay in Alameda. After they have said, do you know where the naval base in Alameda is? It's like the most vapid answer. She wasn't an actor. She was just a lady walking by, and they liked it so much. They're like, how would you like to be in this movie?
It's fantastic.
So,
that would be so fun.
Subconsciously inspired me to be a nuclear submariner, I suppose.
Yeah.
7 Days was an interesting series.
Yeah, I think I only saw one or two episodes of that one. It was short-lived mid-90s, kind of 94, 95, somewhere in there.
Yeah. No, 96. It was after I was married, so late 90s to 2000s probably.
Lightning. It's a book. Hasn't been adapted yet. Dang it.
Definitely needs to be adapted.
Yeah.
But every single Dean Koontz adaptation has not turned out real well.
Yeah. Yeah.
True.
I think we're wrapped. Yeah. Yeah. Let us know what your favorite time travel things are. And if you like a good closed loop, if you like a downer ending, if you like an arty movie, if you're like, oh, Colin didn't like it, I'd probably love it. Or Colin didn't like it, I probably won't. So
there probably aren't very many people like that. I seem to be quite rare in those feelings. Do we want to rank them really quick?
Oh yeah, let's rank them.
Oh, I'm gonna go 12 Monkeys then. La Jete. Okay.
I would agree.
Oh, I would agree as well. A book movie. No.
No, movie book.
Yes, I am. Yeah. Let us know what you thought of the short film and of the not short film.
Right.
And all right. Have we decided what we're doing next? We keep talking about doing graphic novels, but we haven't chosen one to do.
It's May.
Mm-hmm.
And Kathy really is interested in doing Princess Bride. But it's a really big slog for her.
The book.
The book.
Yes. Right? Agreed.
I think we ought to bite off and run with the summer of graphic novels.
Okay.
In the immediate future, I can't think of any other adapted movies that are coming out or adapted works that might be interesting to cover.
Here's where it may work out well, because the Supergirl movie is adapted from an actual graphic novel run.
Okay.
Really?
A Woman of Tomorrow. So we could do that.
Well, that'd be cool. That movie does look like it's going to be good. I saw the trailer for it.
I think it makes sense for the people who haven't read the graphic novel to watch the movie first, but I have already read it because it was nominated for the Hugo a couple years ago.
Wow.
So it's in the packet. Yeah.
It was in the packet. Oh, which packet?
Whenever it was nominated. 24, something like that.
I might have that, maybe.
I think I still have it, so.
So I should watch it first, then read it, or read it, then watch it?
I don't know. I mean, it's a graphic novel, right? You can read it in a couple of hours.
Yeah.
In all likelihood.
Actually, I don't have it. I never downloaded those because I didn't vote for them. It's just not a medium I'm overly fond of, so.
Okay. Well, I know the library has it. All right. So yeah, we will pick a graphic novel thing to do, but it will be probably either Judge Dredd or Scott Pilgrim, maybe Men in Black.
Watchmen.
Could do Watchmen, but then we have to talk about if we want to do this series. The series is a sequel, though.
No, movie.
Yeah.
Movie done. Just done and done, because it's one and one.
It is, yeah. 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 The series is really, really good, though. But it is a sequel. It's not adapted from the graphic novel.
It's a sequel?
Yeah, it is.
After the Alien Invasion?
Mm-hmm.
Alien Invasion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, that could definitely be one we do. V for Vendetta is a popular one as well. I don't love it, but I wouldn't mind. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So the challenge here is finding which titles to do, you know, because the challenge really is, are you adapting a graphic novel or are you adapting a comic character and world?
Right.
Or some combination of all of that.
Right.
Oh, Hellboy might be fun as well. There's two of those movies, three movies.
Yeah.
Because this is the David Harbour one.
Right.
So Sarah, who was with us for the Hot Ones Challenge, said that she could give me some recommendations for what to read.
Why don't we do it easy and just do Scott Pilgrim Saves the World?
Okay.
Well, in June, we should do Supergirl.
In June, we should do Supergirl.
Is that when it comes out?
Yeah, it comes out June 26th.
Okay. Sold.
I just looked it up on IMDb.
Yeah. Fast turnaround.
June what?
26th.
It is a quick turnaround. So, yeah, maybe we could do that one for the beginning of July and do Dread first.
That'll work.
Got to find some Dread case files because there's a unique challenge to finding Judge Dread stuff because he doesn't have his own stuff.
That's the last Friday of June, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so we have it. Let's do either Scott Pilgrim. We'll do either Scott Pilgrim or Dread for June and then do Supergirl for right at the beginning of July. And then we'll be paid up and take the rest of the summer off.
Boom. Done.
No, we won't. But
I feel like we did this last summer too. Like somehow like June and July fell really close to each other.
Yeah.
And we were just good for the rest of July and August.
It was kind
of
nice.
Because we did the like end of August, I want to say.
Yeah.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah, because we went to Worlds, which I don't think everyone is doing this year.
Worldcon, yeah.
Yeah, except for me.
Yeah.
You're going to Anaheim?
I am.
Oh, nice. Good for you.
All right. Well, yeah, maybe we'll then try and bank something for when Colin's traveling. And I'm traveling at some point during August as well. So we'll do that. Give us your recommendations for graphic novels. We've put this plea out before because we've threatened to do this for years.
I'm with you, though, with the idea of like as much self-contained as a graphic novel can be to the movie rather than like adapting a character, like you said.
Right. But I want to do Judge Dredd. And so we have to bite the bullet with that.
I guess I get that. That's fair.
Well, we do get to watch two Judge Dredd movies.
I will acquiesce just because Dredd is fantastic. Yeah. I love that movie. Yeah.
And I have a soft spot for
Dredd. It's called Dredd. It's the one with Carl Urban.
Dredd 3D, right?
Yeah. Not Judge Dredd. That Judge Dredd's Stallone.
Yes. I have a soft spot for that movie. It's not good, but I do enjoy it.
But it's very Stallone.
Yeah. So I haven't seen it since it came out in the theater. So
yeah. That one's like Demolition Style Stallone right there.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Which I do love. So that's
all right. Anyhow, I think we're out of here. So thanks everybody for listening. And until next time, may the road rise up to meet you. And may the book always fall open to where you left off.
Ciao.
Even though we didn't do a book this time. I'm Seth.
I'm James Cole. And
I wish I'd known you were going to do that.
He told me about it, but it was like a week ago, so I forgot.
I would have studied Brad Pitt and went... And I'm Colin.
Yeah. Yes. And
just cut that out and do and Colin.
Okay. I will. Sounds good.